So the value alignment, no matter what tech comes in, you know, what, you know, fancy stuff comes in, the value alignment to that mantra is critical. Strong alignment fosters a sense of shared purpose and direction.
Welcome to Technovation. I'm your host, Peter Hai. Our broadcast today comes from our most recent MetaStrategy Digital Symposium, and the topic was digital as an enabler of scale. The panelists who spoke on it were JP Saini, Chief Digital and Technology Officer of Sunbelt Rentals, and Johnny Leroy, the Chief Technology Officer of Grainger. The gentleman who led that conversation was MetaStrategy Co-Head of Research, Media, and Executive Networks, Stephen Norton. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And now for a word from our partner, Nile, and the company's co-founder and Chief Executive Officer, Pankaj Patel. Pankaj, talk a bit about the idea of network as a service, as this is a category you're pioneering, essentially.
Service is truly the new product. We really wanted to mold this in a way where AI truly drives the closed-loop automation, because we saw this as a major hole in the way the networks were today. This is where we realized that data is the secret ingredient for what we are doing. Every facet of our life is dependent on connectivity and networking today. So we will say, before you design any piece of hardware, software, or firmware, ask yourself a question. Do you really need this? Focus on what is truly needed to deliver a service. After you have decided that you are going to need this, simplify it to the nth degree. Simplification is the key. After that, we said, let's automate everything that we are doing. Doing all of this, we were able to simplify and automate 95% of the usual things people encounter in the IT shop. You cannot do this with the product mindset. This is what we had to do in order to create the true service offering.
Thanks, Pankaj. And now on to our broadcast.
Personally, as I've reflected on this, it's been so encouraging across the board to just be that real recognition that, you know, doing the same thing that got you here today isn't going to get you where you need to go tomorrow. And there's just a real collective understanding about having the right combo of technology and people and finding that right balance as being the key to deliver on those ambitions. And so I'm really excited to get into this conversation as we think about the ways in which digital enables scale at various organizations. Please allow me to welcome to the stage JP Saini. He's the Chief Digital and Technology Officer at Sunbelt Rentals, a leader in the equipment rental industry with thousands of locations in the U.S. and abroad. He joined the company in 2020 and has been playing an instrumental role in driving scale and transforming the customer experience there. He's joined by Johnny Leroy, who's the Chief Technology Officer of Grainger, 96-year-old company, more than $16.5 billion in sales. They serve millions of customers around the globe in a couple of segments. They've got high-touch solutions that include maintenance, repair, technical support, as well as millions of products that are available to customers. He's been in the role for a little more than 3.5 years now and is really doing a lot to lead an engineering culture there, next-generation engineering culture. And I'm really excited to have you both together because there are lots of places where your roles overlap, and it's not just in heavy equipment and machinery. You're both overseeing transformation efforts across really complex businesses, including aspects like inventory management, transportation, commercial routing, e-commerce, omnichannel, all of the environmental considerations that go along with those things. And I'm sure that's just naming a few. And within all of that, you're doing it to make sure that your customers can do their best work and do it efficiently and safely. So I'm excited today to talk with you both about how technology helps lay the foundation for where you want to go. So JP, I thought we'd start with you. On the topic of scale, could you reflect a bit on where Sunbelt is on its journey and the ways in which you see digital really being positioned to drive that?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Stephen. And, you know, good afternoon, everybody. Good to talk to you. Yeah, I think it's been an interesting journey. You know, it's almost shy of 4 years, right in the middle of pandemic shutdown. So I think a lot of those stories are pretty familiar to most of us. But I was listening earlier about, you know, when is the right time to invest? I think, you know, we chose to invest when the world was in a total shutdown mode and, you know, get ready for what we needed to. So I think the bets are certainly paying off. You know, it's been a long journey of, you know, 3 years of, you know, lots of build. And I think now we're, you know, at the cusp of getting into an operationalization strategy, meaning said differently, really get these assets in the hands of our operators and customers for that matter. And then, you know, of course, it leads to a different marketplace when it comes to rental services and, you know, monetization at the heart of it, right? Also creates transparency, stickiness, all those things that come along with it. So yeah, it's been a, you know, long hard run. I think we're looking for a break soon. But that's really, you know, turning the tide from a very high degree of productization to now entering, you know, the operationalization mode, and then leading to probably the next, you know, 3 to 4 quarters where all of this should have a clear impact on the top line, bottom line, and gobs of efficiencies that come along in the middle. So, and then of course, you already talked about omni-channel approach. You know, we've created multiple channels. You know, no matter what channel you engage us on, I think we took a page, you know, from Johnny, your book. You know, you guys were early starters in that, you know, analogy to say no matter what channel you engage us on, you have access to the same level of inventory, transparently, you know, dynamic pricing that goes along with it, to us applying a logistics capability, you know, in real time, and then also apply a human assets in real time. I mean, logistics don't happen on its own, to not just getting the assets in your hands, but also making sure we can get it back and get it ready for the next order and the next customer. So, you know, there's a lot involved there to unpack, but, you know, let me hand it back to you, Stephen. I think we're on a fantastic journey here.
Sure. Thank you for that overview, JP. And I'm excited to see how things materialize over the next little bit. For both of you, your businesses obviously involve high touch interactions with customers, and that are becoming more and more data driven, both to deliver insights to people, but also to make sure that that experience is top notch, especially when expectations are only getting bigger and higher. Johnny, as you think about Grainger's evolution, how do you think about making sure your customers, either internal or external or both, have the right data at the right time to deliver on some of those business outcomes that you're looking for?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And thanks for having me on. And I'll almost lean back to the previous conversation about offense and defense. If we think about what we're trying to do, we use different framing. We talk about how we're trying to drive advantage, scale, grow our business, and how we're trying to modernize our systems. And JP, you'd mentioned we were early movers in some technology areas, and we've been early adopters, but that means you've got the duty to keep up and keep modernizing and keep tending your garden to keep the weeds out. And then in the middle of that strategy is how do we evolve our ways of working, our talent, and our culture. But the key about getting data into the right places, we think you've got to understand the mechanics of how we grow our business and what matters. So we really try to focus on the mechanics of not just how we grow revenue, but how we win and retain customers and what matters for them. So we've been investing a lot into systems that help us understand our products and our assortment, and understand our customers. We're trying to generate this nice flywheel of better systems that help our team members create better data, whether they're going through our assortment, working out what products we should stock, how to describe them, or people understanding our customers or managing inventory. And those flywheels of better systems allow our team members with better standard work to generate better data. So the simple first part of our strategy is have better data. And a lot of our products and software investments are generating better data. Next part is really get it to the right people at the right time in the right ways. And there's a lot of engine room remapping there. I think a lot of organizations had data that moved around their systems every night, every week, every month in these batch jobs. We've been shifting more and more to real-time, event-driven, API-oriented movement of data, so we can get data to the right places at the right times. And then there's a key piece of how we improve the quality of that data. And we think getting the right ownership or accountability on top of that data is a really important part. And it's part of the data mesh thinking of how do you have some sort of product ownership around data. So you see it as an internal asset that you're trying to make available to your organization. So that's one we're beginning to work on for some of our advanced data sets, who owns them, who's accountable for the quality of them, and how they're consumed. Finally, we need to activate that data. And so there's lots of good examples of getting it into the right places at the right times. But there's some interesting ones of, as you mentioned, we operate this high touch model. We're not just digital, but we're digital and people, team members who go out and visit our customers. For example, we manage inventory with some vending machines and some stock rooms that we manage. We're doing a lot of interesting work of how to support the reps who go out into the field to support those that machinery and manage inventory. whether it's through what's now traditional AI investments in computer vision to recognize products or see how full or empty stock rooms are, or in how to secure vending machines and so on. And there's a huge amount of getting the right data into the right places at the right times. But it all starts with having good data, and that's a big part of our focus.
Excellent. Yeah, I appreciate your comment about sort of that virtuous cycle or the flywheel of data and allowing your systems to create better data. In that sense, it becomes everyone's role to help ensure that that is good, but also layering on that layer of ownership and accountability that makes sure that that's going to happen, not only for a little while, but really continue as the organization scales up. Excellent. Terry, would you mind bringing up the results of the poll, please? So this one was looking at where folks are focused in terms of talent and AI. And it looks like we're about an even split between scaling AI productivity tools and widespread education and upskilling. And I suppose there are some ways in which that those two things overlap, and it certainly matches what we've heard a little bit earlier today about the role that AI can play in delivering some of these productivity changes. I would love to build on that a little bit and talk to you guys about the people aspect. Johnny, as you just mentioned, right, you're not just giving people tools out in the field. There's an element of having to make sure that the people are able to use those tools effectively. I'll stick with you for now, Johnny. How are you thinking about that bigger cultural shift or educational piece with your customers?
We have sort of various layers of customers who we're looking at, and really for our customers out there who are buying our products, we're not actually trying to educate them. We're not trying to educate them on using new technology. We're trying to show up and meet them where they are and make their problems go away. They don't want to have to be worrying about, do I have enough tools or gloves, or am I going to run out of equipment to keep my operations running? That's our problem we try to take off their hands. And that's part of the value of having a high touch model, is we have people who go visit them. We have fairly sort of easy to use systems, often integrated into their world and into their procurement channels. So our job is then to empower our humans and empower those systems with better tooling. So in many ways, we're not trying to educate the customers. We're trying to meet them where they are. Internally, I think we are trying to educate folks. And so I think if I think about our technology talent, there's a big effort there to work out how do we get people ready for some of the new skill sets, and how do we support people with self-guided learning and then in the moment training. We do a lot of dojos to support teams as a whole. And I think there's some interesting work right now to try to work out some of the new data science, machine learning roles. What's the sort of breadth or narrowness of them? And how do you focus in on what's a machine learning scientist? How do they focus on what they're really good at? And what's a more general automation engineering type role where we can cross-purpose someone who's good at cloud automation or infrastructure automation or just software automation and bring them to bear into some of those new MLOps tools? So we're trying to work out what are the pathways to develop those skill sets for new and highly experienced team members.
Yeah, absolutely. Something we're hearing a lot of is what are those new roles look like? What are they called? How's it going to look? Definitely early stages, but an exciting time for sure. JP, turning to you, I'd love to stay on the culture piece. What do you see as some of the keys to driving the cultural transformation inside Sunbelt, especially as you think about preparing for that next level of growth?
Yeah, no, Stephen, I think the value alignment is the first one. I think, you know, what do we stand for as a business? You know, what's our core? You know, how do our customers perceive us? I think, you know, we're known for making sure that when we say we deliver the services we do, whether it's hustle or muscle or, you know, everything within, it gets done, right? So I think that's the value, you know, in the fabric of the Sunbelt culture. So the value alignment, you know, no matter what tech comes in, you know, what, you know, fancy stuff comes in, the value alignment to that mantra is critical. So, you know, we're certainly keeping, you know, a strong lens on that. You know, strong alignment fosters, you know, a sense of shared purpose and direction. And I think that's been our, you know, common thread across everything we have done in terms of how we rally our people and, you know, why should we adopt new technologies, you know, what does it bring to the table? Does it freeing up my quality time? You know, is it helping me nurture the customer better or putting time back in the bank for some strategic thinking? But then also leadership commitment. I think the culture, you know, certainly flows downhill. So whether it's our, you know, ops, our business leaders, our folks in the field, or, you know, call it, you know, back in the cab in a 18-wheeler, you know, that leadership is critical. And I think we just don't believe in, you know, leaders and followers. I think each one of us is a leader. It's a shadow we create every day. You know, you're a leader representing Sunbelt when you show up for a delivery at a customer site. So I think, you know, that's sort of the mindset that we haven't really, you know, let go of. And then inclusion and diversity, not just caste, color, creed. I think that, you know, it has to be done as a society, but really about involving right people, the right time, early engagement, you know, making sure that there is, you know, an opportunity to engage, opportunity to share, you know, the wants and needs. And then, of course, you know, there's always a level of practicality that you have to apply to it, you know, what gets done when and where. Every idea is a good idea. Two, you know, continuous learning and development. I think we have seen in our careers, you know, things evolve. You know, there's no, you know, stagnation in this race. So investing in our people, not just in, you know, tech and tools and, you know, ways to get stuff done, but really about polishing the brass in terms of soft skills. I think that goes, you know, a longer way, if you would. So we have invested, you know, in a engagement program from manager up where it's a very broad reach. And, you know, we're just helping folks get better at the craft, whether it's a craft of engaging internally or, you know, managing a partner or interaction in a group setting. And then, of course, adaptability and innovation. I think, you know, we have this mindset of, you know, not just, you know, get it done and forget about it. It's the, you know, RCI, the run with continuous innovation model, meaning we are going to continually deliver and evolve over a period of time. And I think that's the foreseeable future. So that's, I think, is really what the cultural aspect to, you know, this business transformation is all about. And I think, so we went in from a multi-pronged approach to say, we can't just do one or the other. If we didn't move from all different directions, we were bound to lose some traction with the folks or lose folks in that journey that we didn't want to lose, who have so much intellectual, you know, capital in their heads and market knowledge that, you know, they can bring to the table. So yeah, right there.
Excellent. Thank you. That's a great overview. And it's making me think back to what Nilu was saying about the stool of aligning people, process, and technology. And I like the extra layer of addition there, really around the values, leadership, inclusion, and driving the leadership mindset in everyone, and also making sure that your teams are able to grow with you as you scale and really bringing the whole organization along. Thank you for that. Pivoting slightly to the AI question, this goes back to the poll. So we've talked a bit already today about opportunities for productivity. We've heard about some companies that are piloting it in small groups and sort of seeing where the most value might be accrued. Johnny, curious where you are in that experimentation phase and what do you see as some of the bigger opportunities as well as maybe some potential challenges as you look to scale this up?
Yeah, we've been doing traditional AI, as I said, for quite a while. The old sort of, it's funny to call it that, but we've got our fair selection of PhDs and patents. had quite a focus on computer vision because we operate in the real physical world. And so understanding the physical world, we still think is an important advantage. We've still got a lot of innovation happening in that side. And a lot around how we manage search, help people find our products. But we're very interested and excited what's possible out of generative AI. And I think we have some of the expected experiments of how to get people the right tooling in a well-governed, well-structured way where we're managing risks. We think we've got the right partners and guardrails in place. Experimenting on the customer service side. For us, the human in the loop piece is actually quite easy because we are a high-touch model. And so we're trying to put superpowers into the hands of our team members. So we're experimenting with some of that, and that seems to be going pretty well. Doing a fair amount on the technology side as well. So some of the coding assistants, not Codium, I'm afraid, yet. We're also looking at that, the whole life cycle and where's their waste, seeing a lot of these AI investments as continuous improvement. And improving coding and is one piece, but improving information retrieval, finding out about existing systems, prior decisions, how to integrate with other systems. We've actually had some tools that came out of our internal hackathons that pulled that information together. So we see really good possibility there of getting more productive. So how do we do more with a constrained or a maintained budget? I do think some of these things are becoming commoditized though. And I think an area we're watching is, I believe the leverage you get from larger language models is beginning to taper. Now, there may be emergent capabilities that come out of them. And now we're really looking at the sort of the cost management side of it as things begin to scale. And I'm beginning to talk about ML FinOps, the sort of cost management you do in the cloud for ML. And some of that is selecting the right model that has the right capability level, but not overly expensive. And similarly, to ground ML systems in your truth and get the right answers, we're tending to have to stuff a lot of information into the context. And that translates into tokens, which translates into money. And so managing how much information you stuff into them, what models you select, and how you structure your architecture, I think that's actually going to be one of the emerging problems we look at. And I don't think the cost benefits coming out of the major providers will hit us in time as we try to scale these systems. So we're going to have to do some ourselves.
Got it. Yeah, it's amazing as this has gone into operationalization stage, just how quickly some of that cost management discussion has ramped up. Thank you for sharing. JP, turning to you, I'd love to hear where you all are in that journey and some of the things that you're thinking about in terms of both challenges and opportunities for either traditional AI, as Johnny nicely put it, or generative AI.
Yeah, I think we're working from both ends. Think of about 18 to 19 billion worth of fleet that keeps growing every quarter just in the North American market alone. So these assets have to be serviced in the field, back in the shop. We have a huge investment in telematics and IoT. What's happening in these machines? The health and utilization is where we started. But now we're really transitioning to predictive, to say predict when a machine or a tool is going to fail, to actually prescribing an action if we can remotely. I think that just is efficient for everybody. There's no work stoppage. We are able to, in fact, get ahead of it to see there's pick something up, swap a replacement, or we know that's going to coming back in a day and the part is going to fail in 2 days, and we can be proactive about making sure part is on the shelf, the technician is identified, time is allocated. So in our business, it's all about what we call an asset being rent ready. And if asset is not rent ready, it's not making money. It's perishable inventory and perishable revenue, if we would. So we never recover from any of that. So in any given day, there's quite a bit of that stuff in the flux. Stuff is in transit, it's back on its way, it's waiting to be picked up, it's back in the shop, it's waiting for a technician to be assigned. So we're bringing all the predictive, prescriptive together. I think that's important for us, from sensing an event to actually making it actionable, whether it's remote or back in the shop. Two, on the generative AI side, I think the biggest impact we have is making sure that our people are operating safely. If you take a persona of a service technician, when they're performing these high-end repairs, well, they have to flip through manuals. They may have to call a buddy, or they're calling an OEM, versus we're trying to bring generative AI together where it's a guided aided repair. Said differently, you got access to all these PDFs and diagrams and schematics to all this intellectual property that exists internally or otherwise. So we're curating all that, and in fact, we're tying it to performance as well, to say not only do the job safely, but let's gauge the performance on every job you perform. So you'll simply be using natural language processing powered by Gen AI behind the scenes. You can say, I'm going to repair this particular asset. You read a serial asset number, it starts a job requisition, and it's actually going to walk you through step by step. And as you're doing it, you're also doing the quality control along the way. So if you're going to do it in 30 minutes and you're hitting it in 25 minutes every single time, well, we know you're doing a great job. But if you're struggling, in doing it every, 35, 40 minutes, we know you need some training. So there are lots of, usage. It's not just safety and productivity, but also an opportunity for training and engagement. The other, generative AI use case that we actually have a POC being built as we speak is, onboarding new, say, equipment rental specialists. Somebody at the counter, when you walk into our 1,300 plus branches, a typical ramp-up time is a couple of months, because these things are pretty complex. You show up to the branch and you're going to say, hey, I'm going to put a fence in. Well, what type of fence? Is it residential, commercial, vinyl, whatnot? So accordingly, a solution is driven. So if you're not an experienced hand, then you're going to struggle to help the customer, versus on the screen, as you're curating some of those initial qualifying questions, well, it starts to build up using Gen AI behind the scenes. And you could have a fresh person coming in on the job for 4 weeks, and they could actually start giving the bundled approach as an answer to say, hey, this is what I think you're going to need. And by the way, here's the price that goes with it. So I think there are a couple of, you know, use cases, you know, learning and development on making sure productivity is covered, safety, you know, quality, to actually the traditional side, which is predictive and then prescribing an action. So those are things, you know, that, you know, have a quite a bit of, you know, impact on our bottom line, you know, on the efficiency side. So we're going after the efficiency end of things first, before we sort of, you know, go after, you know, call it the top of the line things that probably will follow.
Gotcha. Yeah, thank you. That's really helpful. And it's always nice to kind of see how all of these new projects are getting tied to actions, whether it's efficiency or revenue, being able to point to that real tangible outcome at the end. It seems to be one of those keys to gaining traction here. With the last minute or so that we have left, I'd love to put a quick question to both of you. And this is coming back to something we've talked about earlier around mindset. Obviously, we're always balancing kind of speed and innovation with the sort of longer term view and the need to scale. I wonder if you have any recommendations for helping to keep your teams and your peers kind of focused on the future state and inspire people about not only where you are, but where you really want to go. Johnny, maybe we'll turn to you first.
Yeah, and I think JP talked about actually how to sort of string together your culture under your strategy. And I think we try to do the same. Our purpose is we keep the world working. And so for a technology team, our job is we keep Grainger working so that Grainger can keep the world working. So keeping people focused on that is super helpful. And actually going and understanding our customers, we're big believers in go sees, go visit the customer, go to a distribution center, go patch into a contact center call so you can understand the problems. Mm-hmm. That really helps. And we think the mechanics of how we win and retain customers are reasonably long lasting and evergreen. So we can organize around that. So we can have our sort of view on the horizon. That said, we've got to be experimenting and adapting with new technology as it comes. And whether it's hackathons or experimentation time, we're trying to drive that. And so in my youth, I used to try to surf rather badly. But I think the key there is you've got to have your eyes on the horizon. And then your knees are going to be bending as you're sort of trying to weather the waves that are coming through. So try to do the same. Surf through it. That's the tip.
Well said. JP, over to you.
I think, you know, staying close to the marketplace, your core business is always, you know, a starting point. I think we're also spending a lot of time on setting clear expectations, not just, you know, just putting people out there. But when I say setting expectations, empowerment and enablement, you know, they go hand in hand, and accountability is least of the worries at that point. And then some incentive and recognition. I think, look, I mean, there's a lot of people burning a lot of long hours and, you know, incentive and recognition, I think that's equally important. We've done quite a bit of work in long-term incentive to, you know, short-term incentive and everything within. I think attracting talent is one thing, but retaining the talent and capitalizing on all the institutional knowledge that comes out of these exercises is important. Two other things I would say is, you know, lead by example. I think that's really the mantra that, you know, I'm honing in every single day in every interaction. I walk the floor a couple of times a day. And you really have to be conscious of the type of shadow you cast. And then just feedback and reflection. I think we all get busy and just, you know, counting the wins, but, you know, getting the feedback, providing the feedback, and then really reflecting on, you know, where we are and, you know, how we got there, but more importantly, the road ahead of us on how we can be a little bit more nimble and efficient and get there without least friction possible. That's really sort of the name of the game for us.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Johnny and JP, for sharing the journeys that you've been on, as well as some of your reflections as you've been in the role. Some exciting trajectories going forward. I look forward to staying in touch. But thank you again so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks.